How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. As always, tons of stuff to talk about today, including last night's UFC 120 from the O2 Arena in London, England. Bad night. A bad night for fighters in the UK. Except for the main event, Michael Bisping did get a big win over Yoshihiro Akiyama via decision. We'll talk about that show, all of the fights on the show, some of the interesting results, decisions, knockouts, and a lot more. Big show to cover there. And a big show to talk about for next weekend in Anaheim, UFC 121, Brock Lesnar versus Cain Velasquez. They're billing it as the biggest heavyweight battle of all time. We'll break that down, give our predictions on the main event. I'm going to be at the show live, so we'll also have a report on the show from a live perspective next week on this very program. We'll talk about the countdown special. Plus, if you've not seen the countdown specials, we'll tell you when the next two air. They're very, very good, so we'll talk about those. Plus, all of the TV for the week. We'll talk about Raw, Ultimate Fighter, the TNA show from Thursday night. A very, very newsworthy show for a lot of reasons. First off, we'll get into the results of Bound for Glory, and then TNA Impact carried the aftermath. We'll talk about all of the angles, and there were a lot of angles on that particular show. 6 minutes of wrestling in 2 hours. We'll talk about the huge rating for the first half hour, the first two quarters, and how the rating trickled down as the show went on and how it collapsed, actually, in the last hour for reaction, plus the very, very low main event rating for that show. So we'll talk about that, plus a bunch of other news, including the release of Matt Hardy. Talk about the cause of death for Lance Cade and Luna Vachon. Talk about Linda McMahon. The Senate race is coming up. There's been a, I don't know if it's a poll, I don't know what you'd call it, but a percentage has been thrown out. What is the percentage? What are the chances of Linda McMahon winning? There is a percentage out there. We'll tell you what that is after the break here. Plus, talk about some WWE injuries and a lot of other news as well. So we're going to take your phone calls and emails throughout the afternoon and, of course, get into all of that after this first break. So hold on, everybody. We're about to get started. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 2 hours, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Going to kick it off today with talk of UFC 120 from the O2 Arena, London, England, last night. Aired on Spike TV for free, so if you didn't get a chance to see it, I'm sure it's going to re-air at some point, so check your local listings. A lot of UK fighters on the show. Was not a great night for most of them, with the exception of Michael Bisping, who decisioned Yoshihiro Akiyama in the main event of the show. On the undercard, the most popular fighter on the show, Dan Hardy, ended up getting knocked out. Knocked into next week by Carlos Condit. Sucks to be him, but as he noted, things happen in fighting. You win some and you lose some. I thought it was an all right show. Mike, what were your thoughts?
You know what? For a is a nice free, if you're in the United States, lead-in to next week. I thought it was a very good show. This is one of those shows that was like, well, thankfully it took place in London and they got a chance to go. They had a nice fan expo this weekend, but I would not have paid any money for it, and thankfully I didn't have to. But it was not a bad show at all, except if you were a British fighter, which, to be honest, I thought the main event would have been over a little bit quicker with the way Akiyama's head was down in the first round when he was trying to throw those big bomb punches. But, yeah, kind of an ugly situation for Dan Hardy, although, you know, a lot of fun was made of Carlos Condit ever since he came from WEC with his 2-2 record. But kind of put an exclamation point on his status in the UFC.
Actually, the Akiyama fight, that first punch thrown by Akiyama, the very first punch thrown in the fight, hit Michael Bisping right in the face. It didn't knock him silly, but Bisping did say in the post-fight press conference that, I couldn't see anything out of my right eye for that entire first round. I'm still kind of seeing dots right now. I mean, he got rocked by that first shot, and I guess Akiyama, after rocking him with the very first shot of the fight, figured, I can get him again. And so he tried for 3 rounds to get him again, over and over and over. And Michael Bisping, at some point, probably very early on, figured, this man is not going to shoot for a takedown. This man is not going to attempt to kick my legs. This man is not going to attempt a body shot. This man is only going to throw shots at my head. And therefore, he was able to avoid all of them. He went to work on Akiyama. Akiyama had some comebacks here and there throughout the fight, but overall, he was just kind of beaten handily all three rounds. I actually gave the first round to Akiyama, but the other two were easily Bisping's rounds. So whether you call it 29-28 or 30-27, it was a one-sided victory for Michael Bisping.
So I had it 30-27, you know, with that said, because he not only hurt him with that right hand that led off the fight, but also hurt him with a left hook. But with that said, Yoshihiro Akiyama, they need to figure out a way. I can't remember who Wanderlei Silva's got up next off the top of my head, but I know he does have a fight set. You have got to make this fight as soon as you can if Akiyama's going to stay at 185 and you want to try to get any more mileage out of him than you possibly can. Not that he can't hurt guys at 185, because obviously he hurt Bisping, but his style and his sense does not carry him as far as being a 185-pound fighter that's going to be able to stay in there and hang with these other guys, especially because he gets baited into, and this was his problem in the last fight with Leben, he gets baited into just throwing punches, and that's all he did. And obviously with Bisping, it was pretty, you know, he picked it up early on, and yeah, Akiyama was not going to do anything else besides stand in there and throw punches, and he does not have enough to try to keep up, enough in the tank to try to keep up with that type of fight, especially because every time he threw those hard punches, his head was down. And actually, Bisping, I really thought, was going to catch him either in a choke or be able to counter him with an uppercut, because that's all Akiyama did, was he did throw hard, but he threw hard with his head down, and that's all he had going for him.
Dan Hardy and Carlos Condit, they actually did some great promos. In fact, there was a great promo that nobody saw a couple of days ago, actually, when Carlos Condit actually missed his first flight to the UK. There was, I guess he was held up at security or something like that, and he didn't make the plane. But regardless, he did, of course, end up getting there. But after he accidentally missed the first flight, Dan Hardy just went off on him, saying, I knew this man was a coward. May as well just get a flight back to New Mexico. And the promos they did before the fight were just as good. Both guys trash-talking each other. And they went in there. Dan Hardy, of course, the most beloved guy on the show, actually. More so even than Bisping in the main event. But he had a stand-up striking battle with Condit. They both threw at the same time. It was almost like a video game where both men throw punches at the same time and then their bodies burst into skeletal pieces. It's exactly what this was like, except, well, Carlos Condit hit him harder and hit him earlier and hit him in the right spot, and that was the end of Dan Hardy, and he was very sad afterwards. He was trying very hard to be a good sport, but you could tell he was just completely heartbroken, and he said, well, you know, it's a fight. You win some, you lose some. We'll see what happens next time. And, you know, I think that this was like a good loss in the sense that I think people saw it as two guys going in there, pounding on each other. One guy got a lucky shot, and the other guy happened to be their favorite guy. But it was kind of a sort of a something that could happen to anybody at any time, as opposed to earlier in the show. For example, in the Mike Pyle-John Hathaway fight, Mike Pyle put John Hathaway in a triangle on the ground. He triangled his head and wasn't enough to get a submission, but, you know, Hathaway could not move. He could not escape, and if the round had not ended, John Hathaway would still be in that triangle right now as you were listening to this. And if you're listening to this in an archive 5 years from now, that fact does not change. He was not getting out. He was so completely beaten by this man. This was not that. This was a flash knockout happening in the middle of a fight, and I think that because of that, people probably looked at it as, you know, stuff happens.
Well, yeah, and that's all it is. I mean, all depending on what comes out now in his, you know, in Hardy's next fight, then you can say something. I mean, he got laid to waste by GSP, getting ground down for five rounds. Yes, this is his first fight since then, and basically, you know, he was throwing a big wide right hand, got caught with a counter left hook. They were throwing at the same time, got caught with that. Not a whole lot you could do about that. Now, how he comes out the next time is when you can go, okay, we can say something a little bit more about Dan Hardy. But he was holding his own, looking good up to that point. Now, granted, that point happened with 30 seconds left to go in the first round, so it was a little bit quick for him, but he didn't lose anything in it. It was an exciting fight. Hardy still, for that crowd that was there, still absolutely adored him, and that was actually kind of nice. You get, you know, so used to crowds who turn so quick. I mean, Hardy was still a hero to that crowd, even though he was devastated, even though he apologized profusely to him. He was still a hero to that crowd, and they still cheered for him even after the loss, and still supported him after the loss. But, yeah, there wasn't much he could do about that punch, but it's going to be interesting to see how he comes back from that. He was supposed to fight, what, a month or two ago. That fight got kind of held up, which led into him being on the undercard of this one. But two losses in a row now. We've got to see how he comes back after this.
The only other thing I want to talk about very quickly here before we go to the break is the Chick Congo-Travis Brown fight, which was an awful fight, by the way. But what was amazing about it was in the second round, Chick Congo got a point deducted because he kept holding on to Travis Brown's shorts.
The third round. That was the worst part. It was the third round.
Was it the third round? Anyway,
yeah,
regardless.
The third round, he needed it bad.
So he keeps holding on to these. That's right. It was the third round. So anyway, the point is, he was grabbing onto this guy's trunks, and the referee said, you know, stop holding onto the trunks. He kept holding onto the trunks. The ref said, stop it. He kept holding on. So the ref said, stop. You've been deducted 1 point. So they go back to fighting again, and as God is my witness, Chick Congo keeps grabbing the dude's shorts. But he's doing it behind the referee's back. Like, Joe Rogan on commentary is repeatedly pointing this out. The man's grabbing the shorts. Check that out. He's grabbing the shorts. The cameraman is zooming in on the man grabbing the shorts. The only one in the world who did not see this was the referee. This was straight out of professional wrestling. It was the craziest thing I've ever seen. He was cheating behind the referee's back. This is up there with Jerome LeBanner at the K1 show a couple of weeks back when the judges ruled that it was a draw and they were going to a fourth round. And he was so angry that they ruled it a draw that he walked out of the ring and essentially lost via count out in a kickboxing match. They called it a DQ, but it was a count out. So we're going to talk about this a little bit more. I want to get Mike's thoughts when we come back from the break. But that was one of the craziest things I've seen in a while. A fighter blatantly cheating behind the referee's back. I also want to get a score on that fight. So that's coming up here in just a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next hour and a half, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Before the break, talking about UFC 120 from the O2 Arena, and the Chick Congo fight in particular, in which Chick Congo blatantly cheated behind the referee's back. He kept grabbing his opponent's shorts, despite the referee repeatedly telling him to knock it off, and even deducting him a point. He chose to try to, out of the blind side of the referee, grab this man's shorts. And, Mike, what were your thoughts on this fight, and how did you score it?
I'm one of those people that actually would have had a cop-out move, but I didn't have any choice. I gave Brown the first round. I gave Congo the second round. In the third round, realistically, I had it 10-10. There was really no other way you could actually score that, to me at least. I mean, I can understand if you went a little bit either way, but I had it 10-10, and with that point taken away, that means I had Brown 10-9, which means I had him winning 29-28. Now, all three judges had it 28-28, which shows you how big of that point deduction that was for Congo. But it was hilarious, because for those people that didn't see it, the point gets deducted. Congo was in such a bad way and was so blown up and was trying to figure out anything to really do enough damage that he would kind of bull rush in there. And he just, exactly, he held the trunks. It wasn't even like he was getting an illegal punch in. No, nothing like that. He was holding the trunks. It was absolutely ridiculous. And then when the official score was rolled, you know, was put out there, it was even more ridiculous.
Let's talk about UFC 121, largely just the main event of the show. Of course, it is Brock Lesnar against Cain Velasquez. It's the biggest heavyweight title fight of all time, they're claiming. I think it's going to be big. I was disappointed last night with both men's performances, actually, on the UFC 120 event on Spike. I thought that Brock, he did fine. I mean, I've seen Brock much better. I was not really disappointed so much in Brock, in that I actually expected him to be a little bit better than he was. Cain Velasquez was just like so completely, it was like he was nervous. He was probably thrown off a little by the fact that they were live via satellite. It was not a good performance by Kane. And in fact, it was the kind of performance that I thought kind of may have hurt the fight a little bit. But the big week is always going to be go-home week. They've had two countdown specials so far on Spike TV. I thought they've both been very good. They are following the two men as they train for this fight. And, you know, Brock went into this fight thinking, I've got to play heel. I've got to be the bad guy here. No one's going to boo Cain Velasquez. His fight needs all the help it's going to get. He's not going to be able to promote it very well. I've got to do everything I can. He hasn't really come off as a heel. It's kind of come off as like two hardworking dudes that you really don't want to see either guy lose. You can kind of root for both guys. And at the end of the day, I guess we'll see how it does. I think a million buys is like kind of a foregone conclusion anytime Lesnar fights at this point. But, you know, this Saturday night really, really threw me off from thinking that this was going to be like one of the biggest fights of all time. I don't know about you, Mike. What were your thoughts?
I think so, too. There's nothing on the undercard that they've really been able to trot out there. And again, it's not anyone's fault. It's just one of those things that happens. And it was like this way with Carwin a little bit, even though there was more heat leading up to it just because of the threat that Carwin was after laying out Muir in the way that he did, and the fact that he can talk a little bit more, and Velasquez can't talk at all. But it's one of those things where it's like, you know, I wish Greg Jackson could have been out there. Just, I don't know, and almost like a Paul E. role. He could have chucked his brain and become another person and went out there and been Kane's manager and been his mouthpiece to hype him up a little bit more. Now, he has in the countdown shows, but with that said, I mean, it's just, there's the problem with pure sports sometimes. Sometimes there's no one there to play the heel, and unfortunately that happened. And again, I was kind of thinking, well, maybe this could be a $1.5 million by fight. It probably won't do that. I think it's going to do, obviously, over $1 million, but I think probably 1-1, 1-2. But if it doesn't do that, again, it's no one's fault. It's just one of those things that happens where, unfortunately, it's not pro wrestling. You don't have somebody that knows he's supposed to go out there and really play a babyface role or a heel role. There was only so much Lesnar could do, and I think he did a good, respectable job of trying his best, but the fight's going to be better than what the lead-up is, I assume.
Well, the thing really is, I mean, when I was watching it, I just thought, okay, you can't not have Kane on this show, in the sense that, you know, Brock, I know they say that he's selling the fight on his own, but you can't just have Brock go out there and talk and not have his challenger out there. But what you can do is you don't have to have Kane do a live promo. You can, I mean, what I would have done is I would have had Brock do his thing like he did on this show. It was fine. And instead of having Kane do an interview, I would have aired a 4-minute video package consisting of the best stuff you have from the two countdown specials and some quotes from him, from, because he was very good on the countdown special. Because the key is, the countdown special is taped. They can interview Kane for 4 hours until he's completely comfortable with the camera crew and you finally get something good out of him, and that's what you put on TV. You can't do that live. So to me, for the challenger in this case, do a video package, get some taped comments from him, and get some clips of him just destroying guys. And then you go to Brock, and he's the champion. He does a live interview, and he hypes up the fight. I think that would have been so much more effective than throwing poor Kane out there to basically drown, essentially, on live TV. It really didn't work for me, and hopefully the countdown specials. The next one is Monday night. They're doing a Monday night 11:30 show, and then the next one after that is Wednesday. So check your Spike listings to make sure you get the exact times. But there's one on Monday and there's one on Wednesday. So check those out, and we'll see. I'm feeling 1.05, 1.1 right now. But, you know, if the next two specials are really spectacular and they do a great job, it's very likely that it could do higher. I don't like making predictions before fight week. I'm usually pretty good at making predictions. And it's going to have to be a good go-home week for me to think it's going to do better than about a 1.1.
And the worst part is they had a TNA moment there, too, because that was the same interview that played when they had the show live that aired on Rogers Sportsnet in Canada and aired throughout the rest of the world. For the American market, they could have actually redone that over. And that was the you know, kind of the pain in the ass part of that. The other thing is, it's also a mode where unless you have the dynamics up there on the screen and they hate each other like a Hardy GSP or Rampage and Rashad or something like that, those interviews to me never really work anyway. It's just filler on the show that's happening as far as leading up, unless you have a really great, great talker, which obviously Brock can talk his ass off if he's in the mood to do it. Training Brock is a little bit of a different story, and he did the best that he could, but with that said, you're not going to get all that stuff out of him anyway. They would have been much better served by forgetting about both interviews, just having a highlight package, showcasing it, and that would have been good enough.
This is our last chance for predictions. I have been on the record since the beginning predicting that Brock Lesnar is going to win this fight. I even have an exact scenario that I've predicted, that being that during the course of the stand-up, Kane will be outclassing Brock on his feet, better technique standing, but in the midst of it, Brock is going to throw a very heavy hand, knock Kane to the ground, and then follow it up with a mauling and a TKO. That is my prediction. What are your thoughts?
It's, you know, I have the typical cop-out answer that everyone has. If this thing actually gets into the third round, everything is out the window and it changes and it's Velasquez's fight. But his hands are quick. His boxing is far better than Brock's is. With that said, I don't think he's got the same one-punch power that Carwin has. And granted, yes, Carwin did rock Lesnar, but you know, one thing that was talked about after the first episode of the Countdown show was, yes, Kane's got all these advantages. He's very dangerous. The only thing he doesn't have is size. When you have a guy that is cutting to get to 265, who is just an amazing physical specimen as Brock, and Carwin was not able to lay waste to him, it doesn't give me much confidence that Velasquez is going to be able to hold on for those first couple of rounds. Now, I think Brock is actually going to finish it. But if it gets to the third round, that's the only thing he's got on is the gas aspect, and that's it. I think Lesnar's actually, again, like you said, is either going to catch him or counter or just in the midst of something be able to lay heavy, you know, heavy hands on Velasquez, knock him down, and be able to smother him after that with ground and pound. But, again, if he can somehow escape to the third round, which is obviously virgin territory for Brock in MMA, then everything is completely out the window.
You know, one aspect that's rather interesting is in regards to cardio. Yes, Kane's cardio is going to be better. With that said, Brock has changed his diet. He is in better shape than he's been in probably for any fight he's ever had. He's lighter. He's leaner. He's already, this is a week out, he's already at 265. So he actually is not going to be cutting to 265. He is 265 now, which means he could weigh in around 264, 263, and go in there at right around that weight. And meanwhile, Kane has gone up in weight. He's right around 250 pounds. So the weight difference between the two guys is not going to be, you know, 30, 40 pounds or anything like that. But at the same time, Brock being lighter is going to help his cardio, and Kane being heavier, I'm not going to say it's going to result in him having bad cardio, but he is heavier. So I don't think it's kind of like it's a toss up here. I mean, it's like, you know, the cardio of each guy, I don't think it's going to be as huge a difference as a lot of people are thinking. And at the same time, the size difference is not going to be as big as a lot of people are thinking. So what that all means, I don't know. But Brock is still bigger. He's a lot stronger. He's extremely fast and quick and powerful at his weight. And even on the Countdown special, I mean, Velasquez's own guy said, you know, there's no guy that you can bring in to replicate Brock Lesnar. So, you know, from that aspect, it's going to be very tough. But at the same time, you know, Brock doesn't really surround himself by guys that are like him that can beat him up. So we'll talk more about this a little bit after the break and then get into some pro wrestling news. I want to talk a lot about TNA. So that's coming up here in just a moment. Listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And for the latest news and information in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, always head to WrestlingObserver.com. We have daily news updates. We have columns, tons of stuff up there, including free radio shows. If you like what you hear, head over to WrestlingObserver.com when the show is over. Scroll down the right-hand side of the page. It's a listing of our latest three free radio shows. Absolutely free. They're MP3s. Just download them, put them on your MP3 player, play them on the computer, play them however you play your MP3s. And if you like what you hear, you can consider signing up, because as a member, you get significantly more. We do 15 to 20 radio shows every single week. Interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of pro wrestling. Guys like Ric Flair, Bret Hart, Bruno Sammartino, Steve Austin was on a couple of weeks ago, Chris Jericho, the list goes on and on. We have hundreds and hundreds of archived radio shows, thousands and thousands of hours of audio dating back to 2005. Every show we have ever done is up in the archives right now for you to download and listen to at your own leisure. So if you love this show and you can't get enough, WrestlingObserver.com is the place to go, both for free content and for paid content as well. It's only $10.99 each month, and for that $10.99 per month, you get full access to everything. There's no extra charges for the archives, for the newsletters, anything else. It's all available for you for $10.99 per month. And as noted, free radio shows as well, MP3 downloads, if you just head up there right now and scroll down the right-hand side of the page. Back to the show here. We were talking about Lesnar and Velasquez. Any last thoughts on that fight before we head to TNA Talk?
The only thing I'm really hoping that comes out of it is I hope Brock's beard ends up being okay, because that is one of the mightiest beards I've ever seen in my entire life. If you didn't think Brock could look any more of a big mountain man, no, not until he got the beard. It's terrifying.
What were your thoughts on Bound for Glory 2010?
I want to try to be as nice as I could possibly be, just because, you know, we have to see where things go, even though it's very easy to say, you know, with how the year has gone with TNA, and frankly, how 8 years of TNA have gone, that I have got no confidence leading into anything after this. But it was not a very good show, even though the rating on Thursday was better than it's been in a long, long time. It was obviously, and I'm sure you're going to get into this, it was obviously not the show to do, style-wise, with 6 minutes of wrestling coming off of what was supposed to be such a big and epic pay-per-view. But I can see them going, well, we don't have much to throw up against the wall, so we might as well go ahead and make Jeff Hardy a heel. I just don't think they did a very good job with it as far as the swerve goes. Okay, yeah, people are surprised. I don't think this thing's got any legs, and after Thursday night, I really don't think this thing has any legs going forward.
I thought the show was all right. I think I actually like the show better than most people, to be honest with you. The Lethal Lockdown was lame. I actually hated that a lot more than most people, in fact. It just was just a cluster. But the main event, Angle, Anderson, Hardy, vacant TNA title. They had a really good match up until all of the BS at the end. And of course, as everybody I'm sure is well aware, Jeff Hardy turned heel. The backstory is they had been talking for a long time about who was going to turn heel, whether it was going to be Jeff Hardy or Rob Van Dam. And the decision was made solely because they figured Jeff Hardy was the one nobody would see coming. And, of course, the reason nobody would see it coming is because Jeff Hardy and Abyss, for example, had been fighting and killing each other for weeks on end. So it made absolutely no sense, but they considered that a victory. So Jeff Hardy turned heel, and that led to the Thursday night Impact, which was the highest rated Impact since January, which, of course, that's the good news. Bad news is the rating pattern sucked. It opened at a 1.5 with 2.1 million viewers. That is an extraordinary number, actually, for TNA. By the time the main event rolled around, which was Mr. Anderson and RVD? Was it Mr. Anderson and RVD? I've already completely forgotten, and I'm not the only one. But regardless, by the time the main event of the show rolled around, it was down to a 1.15. That is a gigantic drop, and it only fell from there further on reaction. And to me, that is a sign of a show that is poor. Because, as I mentioned on our website several days ago, if there was a Raw show that opened at a, I don't know, 4 and ended at a 3, for example, this would be like the biggest story in months if something like that happened. In fact, usually there's maybe 2 times a year where the second hour of Raw is lower rated than the first hour. It's almost always the second hour has the higher rating. This TNA number, it plunged during the show. And to me, that is a sign of a show where they did too much stuff, people lost interest, and they tuned out.
Not only did they do too much stuff and people lost interest, they also lost $15,000. And it was amazing. They have all of this nonsense at the beginning of the show, and there was a lot of nonsense all over Impact, but all this nonsense at the beginning of the show, they come back from commercial, JWoww is pulling into the arena. Now, I guess you're supposed to, I guess everyone out there is supposed to watch Jersey Shore and know who this woman is. They show her pulling up, they say, oh my God, look, JWoww's here. They throw it back, and they just start talking about Surge and Dixie Carter and Bischoff taking over the company. You just spent $15,000. Maybe you want to tell people who the hell this person is. It was just an asinine show. It was very TNA-esque. And again, don't want to be too craptastic too early on this. But again, what I have got zero confidence in that company to be able to draw me into anything they're going to do on how any of this makes any sense. And extra embarrassing, you have now 2 large heel factions in that company. You had a perfect... I'm still not exactly sure why you would bother have Fortune come out there and have the confrontation between Flair and Hogan. They play like they're going to fight, and then, of course, it's all big hugs and it's all a bunch of laughs. What is the point of that?
I guess to make 1 super faction. I have no idea.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, because super faction.
You know, it was so bad. It's amazing. We beat it to death, and people are probably tired of hearing of it. But it's so WCW because it's the same people from WCW that it's just embarrassing.
You know what I love?
The mistakes are made where it's like, does anyone expect? Who are you supposed to support and cheer outside of RVD? What are you supposed to cheer in this faction? What is the reason to watch other, to see people get mowed over?
I do love when people email and just say, we're sick of hearing you say the same things about TNA every week. And to me, it's always like, I'm just reviewing the show. I'm just talking about what happened. The reason that we say the same things every week is because TNA has been doing the same thing for 8 years. They've been doing the same exact garbage for 8 years. I mean, you can go through the show on Thursday night, and you can just rattle off one by one all of the mistakes that they have made in the past that they are repeating again. I mean, the one finger touch title change. Okay, we saw that in 1998. Okay, Eric Bischoff as a heel, leading a faction against some babyfaces. We saw that in January. The Crash TV format for a big show with a ratings pattern that declined. We saw that in January. This new faction, this faction warfare thing, is a new version of the Main Event Mafia. We just saw that a couple of years ago. Dixie Carter, the whole...
They bitch about the rating, and people will say, well, God, you're being too negative on it. Realistically, they're going to keep the same base. They will always say, well, people online and people that would be listening to this show, they don't really count. They're going to watch wrestling anyway. Okay, that's fine. Our opinion on this won't matter. At the end of the day, when they come back next week, next Thursday, the rating is going to be a 1. It's their fault they haven't done anything to get anybody else into their shows, much less buy any of their pay-per-views, so... It's not our fault. It's not anybody else's fault but their own. When that thing goes back down to an 0.9 or a 1 on Thursday, whose fault is that? It's their own because of this jumbled nonsense that they've done.
I actually think it'll do a 1-2 next week. I won't go as far as dropping down to a 1, but I do think that, I mean, there's no way to me that they're doing another 1-4. I just don't see it.
No, and I'll at least say it. They'll be back down to a 1.
Okay. You may be right, but I think 1-2 is probably where they will fall. But, I mean, to me, it's just you had your chance with 2.1 million viewers, and they gave you a chance for a half hour, which was how long they gave them a chance. And at the half hour mark, that is when those people started to tune out. And by the end of the show, you were back down to your base audience. So all of those people that sampled Impact on Thursday night, this is a statistical fact here. This is not my opinion. Every person that sampled Impact last Thursday, everybody that gave it a try for the first time or who came back to give it another shot, they all gave up before the show was over. They just did, because the show finished at a 1-2. That is where they always finish. So that to me says next week you're going to do a 1-2. The people that stuck through that show until the bitter end, those people are coming back next week. So I say 1.15, which is a 1.2.
And some of the worst goddamn synergy in the world, too. You have Jersey Shore is, you know, on MTV. MTV owned by Viacom. Spike owned by Viacom. You heard nothing. There was nothing leading into outside of, you know, buzz as far as people who heard about the tapings and heard JWoww was going to be there. How else would they have known that there was going to be some Jersey Shore impact? Well, literally on Impact, and I frankly, because of the money they paid, you think they would have hyped that up a little bit more in the first hour or driven it home that a guest from Jersey Shore or a major television show is going to be on. Heaven forbid that they could actually do that.
No, the JWoww segment did the lowest rating of the show. The lowest rating of the 2 hours JWoww did. And when she came out, they basically told everybody there's a real Jersey Shore on the other channel right now. So, again, I saw that in 1999, I believe, when Eric Bischoff told people Mick Foley is going to be winning the championship on the other show, and millions of people turned the channel all at the same time. So he learned nothing from that. They learned nothing from anything. So if you wonder why it's the same stuff being talked about week after week, it's because nothing ever changes in TNA. They don't learn anything from their successes. They don't learn anything from their failures. And so as long as Spike is going to support them, as long as Bob Carter is going to support them, for the next 1,000 years, I'm going to be saying the exact same things here on this program. So,
I'm sorry, I have not been the biggest Abyss fan anyway, just because of the ups and downs he has had since the Jim Mitchell days of TNA and how he's been preceded. To see him walk down like it was homecoming or something, and he was coming back the next year after winning a national championship, and here Abyss comes down, clapping it up, coming down the aisle, give me a break. Especially, we're supposed to be scared of this guy?
I guess.
Mean, come on. it's just so stinking painful.
It was a bad show, everybody. It's a bad show. I actually enjoyed the show for about the first, I can't say the first hour, but I would say for the first 45 minutes I was fine with it, until Madison Rain came out, and that's when the show started to falter with me, and
that was the worst part, too. In that 45 minutes, there was nothing but talk. Now, granted, her match only went 5 seconds, and it was set up Mickie James and her. But with that said, it took 45 minutes to get to that point.
Yep. There was no wrestling for an hour and 15 minutes on this program. And then after that, most of the wrestling was pretty bad. We're going to head to a break.
When he said, you know, when Vince
actually,
Russo
Mike,
came
hold,
out.
Mike,
the,
hold on. Hold on one second. Hold on.
we got to
head to a break here. When we come back, I will let you continue this rant. We can rant all night if you'd like. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on the show. Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live, joined by Mike Sempervivi, who is in rare form tonight, Wrestling Observer Live. And Mike, you were in the midst of ranting about Impact when I had to cut you off for the break, so continue.
I'm just still just amazed and angry by that show. I don't know. I just, with all the talent that's there, too, and again, this was not like this was going to save the company or anything like that, but okay, here's another big press on the reset button, and it's just a mess. I mean, the one finger, you know, fall from Madison Rain, which again was beaten into the ground, and I guess the Pope and RVD are, I guess, the only hopes TNA has right now, but it's just very frustrating, up and down, and Vince Russo made a crack. I forget when it was earlier on this year when they had a show that was, there was like 10 minutes of wrestling on it, and he was the one who came out and said, well, if you're counting time on a fake pro wrestling show, you know, he called out those people that actually wanted to see wrestling on the wrestling show. You would have figured from the backlash of that, they would have done something, anything, to have a little bit of wrestling on this show. It was just such an embarrassing follow-up show. I'm fine with a lot of talking being on there. If there's at least a little bit, the entire show was talking. The entire show was talking. The Pope got beat up in 3 minutes. The main event went about 10. That's it. With 13 minutes of wrestling on the entire show, 14 if you include Madison Rayne's match, it was just a really embarrassing situation. And it's like, what kind of, who are you trying to pull here into watching your program?
Yeah, it's a great example of people, well, I shouldn't say people. One person in particular, the head writer, who I don't know if he's embarrassed to be a wrestling writer, but he just doesn't like wrestling. He wants to write a sitcom. He will never get a job writing a sitcom because he's no good at his job. So he's stuck writing a sitcom in the place of what should be a wrestling show. And we are going to move on now, everybody. We're going to go to the top of the hour break here. When we come back, we're going to talk about Raw in Seattle. I was there live. So we'll talk about that show and give you some thoughts on what's coming up in WWE and take your email questions and talk more news coming up in the second hour here. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be right back. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live, here for the next hour, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as always by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare, located over at WrestlingObserver.com. We spent the first hour, what a first hour it was, everybody. Spent the first hour talking a lot about UFC, talked about UFC 120 last night in the UK, and UFC 121, which is coming up next week, live in Anaheim, Saturday night. It is the big show of the fall for most people. Brock Lesnar is returning to fighting. The giant bearded monster will take on the Mexican sensation, Cain Velasquez, in the main event of the show. And we did a preview of that. Both gave our predictions. We're both predicting Brock Lesnar. So next Sunday, we'll either be laughing uproariously on the show about our fantastic prognostication abilities, or we will, I don't know, be really sad. So anyway,
Cain is Mexican? I didn't know that.
Well, that's what they claim.
They haven't been driving that point home well enough, which a lot of people are making fun of that, but you have to give UFC credit. They've done a lot of stop starts as far as their fan base goes, as far as really reaching out into that market, and now they've done a really good job in the fact that on most cable systems, it's not a alternate pay-per-view like boxing or something like that that is airing on the secondary channel. It's actually the UFC Spanish feed, and I know a lot of people are kind of annoyed saying, well, he's an American, he went to college here and all that stuff, but they need to really reach out to that base. So the fact they're driving that home is actually a great idea to me.
We also ranted and raved like madmen about the Impact show from this past Thursday night, but we are done. No more talking about Impact.
Thank
for the
God.
For the next hour, we've got more pro wrestling and mixed martial arts talk. And when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about Raw. This past Monday night was in Seattle, Washington, my hometown. So I went to the show live with a couple of friends, and we'll talk a lot about that. We'll talk about house shows and Raw tapings these days, if you haven't gone to them of late. Some of the differences between the national shows and what I saw in Seattle. Plus, we'll talk about the big angle on that show with Cena and Wade Barrett, which actually was a tremendous angle live, and hopefully it came off just as well on TV. So that's coming up in just a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next hour, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. And Mike, what was the last WWE event that you attended?
Ooh, let's see. It may have been the ill-fated last ECW show in Salisbury, Maryland. I think may have been the last one I'd actually gone to, because most of the ones in my area have had such poor ticket sales that they have canceled them.
Really?
I know they're going to be coming again soon with the Raw side, but I think the last times that they've tried to come down has been SmackDown, and they have unfortunately had to cancel those due to poor ticket sales.
Wow. Well, Raw did about 8,500 fans in Seattle, which is a pretty good crowd. Not a great crowd by any stretch. They curtained off, I would say, a third of the building. They curtained off most of the upper deck, and there were scattered empty seats over by the hard camera. The one thing interesting about the show was that when you get reports from a lot of events around the nation, you hear about all of the kids that are there. It's like it's overrun with children. There are children all over the place, and it leads people to think that, well, WWE is they're really hitting it with this kids' audience. Thing is, if you look at the ratings and the breakdowns of who's watching the show, there were far more children watching the show during the boom period when Raw was decidedly not PG. Now, the reason you see so many kids is the adult audience has dwindled. And so with the adult audience dwindling, you see kids everywhere. Well, strange thing was, I noticed this when I went to Elimination Chamber, No Way Out, I believe, last year I went to. And it was in Oregon, Portland, if I recall correctly. And I was shocked at the time because there weren't a lot of kids there. And I thought, wow, that's kind of weird. It's like all I ever do is hear about tons of kids, and I go to Oregon, and there's like no kids there. So I go to Seattle, and lo and behold, I don't want to say there were no kids, because there were definitely kids there. There are kids at every WWE event. But like, it was not overflowing with kids. Like, I looked down my row, and there were 20 seats in the row. And of those 20 seats, there were 3 kids. And then I looked at the row in front of me, and there were 2 kids in 20 rows. And it was like that throughout the building. So I don't know if it's like a Northwest thing, where because the Portland scene was really, really hot back in the day, and I don't know, it was really weird. But the thing was, like, you know, you go to UFC events and there are people just jumping up and down and going nuts, and they're all wild and crazy. This Raw show, it was a bunch of adults sitting there watching the show. It was, I don't want to say it was like Japan, because it wasn't, but I mean, people would stand up here and there, and they would cheer, and there was like this one woman a couple rows in front of me that was just out of her mind all the time. But like, in general, it was just like a lot of adults sitting there watching the show and clapping for certain things and booing for certain things and being completely bored by the women's stuff with Lay Cool in that final segment. But to me, the keys to the show were John Cena is a superstar. He got a gigantic reaction coming out. He got a standing ovation. Randy Orton, same deal. Standing ovation, huge reaction. Everybody stood up when he came out. Santino was beloved, but that was pretty much it. Everybody else, you know, they were cheered. Daniel Bryan was pretty over, since he's, of course, from Aberdeen, Washington. And there were some people that stood up when he came out. But in general, most of the guys just got polite reactions and cheers and that sort of thing. And the people knew who to cheer and they knew who to boo. And I think, to me, the important thing is, unlike Impact this week, which died as the show went on, Raw built towards the main event, which was Cena versus Miz. And they did the angle with Wade Barrett afterwards, where Cena lost, and Wade got in his face and begged Cena to hit him, and Cena refused to do it, and this and that. And that was the moment where Seattle was on its feet, and they were so into this angle. I was looking around amazed at how badly people really wanted to see John Cena punch this guy. So we'll see where it goes. We'll see if they screw it up before it's over. But right now, this angle is really working. And Mike, from a TV perspective, how did this come across?
I thought it actually came across really, really good, too. And they had they threw in the curveball of Ron Killings, or R-Truth, actually going to Cena in the locker room saying, "Man, you don't have to do this. You can quit." Which I thought had to be done, because it opens up at least some doubt in the viewer's mind who's sitting at home going, well, why did his friend tell him that he could just quit? He can't quit, or it just leads to something down the line, at least as far as kind of throwing something up in the air because you're not sure where it's going to go over, you know, if Cena, if they do decide to pull the trigger on John Cena and they go, okay, and it's a hell of a risk to do. It's a hell of a risk to do because the amount of merchandise and because of the kids that, love Cena and the whole nine yards, that you're going to lose out on that. And I don't think Randy Orton, I mean, obviously Randy Orton does not have a kid's appeal to him, so you're going to be missing out on some of the stuff that way. But they have given it the possibilities and the options to go a lot of different directions, and I thought it came off really, really well. Not only that, just the fact that Barrett, who's been, I mean, it's not like he didn't do any talking on the Florida Championship Wrestling show before he got to NXT. He was doing announcing. He is very comfortable on the mic. And I thought how they pulled off the end of that with, again, this is the second week in a row now where the show has ended with Cena basically backing down and the crowd really, really into it. And there's nothing, I can't fault anything about it so far, at least so far, because it's come off, I think, really, really well.
I thought Monday was Wade Barrett's best performance yet. I thought he was just outstanding. I thought everybody was outstanding. And to me, the truth thing was like, I saw it as WWE not entirely being sure where they're going to go and leaving the door open if they decide to turn him heel. Because if the time comes where John Cena is beating up his friends because he is forced to do the bidding of Wade Barrett in NXT, you can bring that up at the end, just the fact that you didn't have to beat the guys up. I mean, you could have quit. You could have left your job. I mean, yes, you would have gotten fired, but you were so selfish. You were so selfish that you chose to beat up your friends. You decided to do what was wrong as opposed to just walking away from this thing that you love and really, you know, it sucks. Yes, it sucks. But the choice really came down to losing your job or beating up all your friends. And you chose to beat up all your friends. You're a jerk. So they can go that direction down the road. Or they can decide not to, and he can remain a babyface. So I liked what they did, and you know it just left that door open for somewhere down the road if they decide that's the direction they're going to go.
Yeah, that's what the best part is. Just it at least created some options for them because they're obviously not sure where they're going to go, and no matter which direction you go in, because, you know, again, John Cena, well, you're beating up your friends. Well, what choice did I have? Yeah, it's easy to say I quit, but, you know, yeah, there's a lot of ways you can play that up on either side, depending on what you do. And I think they just, again, they did a really, really good job with that. And they actually put at least a little bit of thought into that, whereas I'm not sure if they put any thought into the rest of it, because the fact that Santino and Tyler Rex are on the bragging rights teams are kind of interesting. Going to be funny to see what happens this week.
Yeah, I've not seen SmackDown yet, but yes, Tyler Rex and Santino are both on the Bragging Rights team. And by the way, everybody, Bragging Rights is next Sunday. Yes, this show is going to die a death.
Not doing a million buys.
No. And in fact, you know, this show was going to die anyway, but coming the day after the Lesnar show, I mean, if they do 80,000 buys in the United States, they should be doing cartwheels because no one's buying the show. I mean, really, nobody's buying this show. It's kind of scary, actually.
Well, and that's if it does 80,000, that'll be a miracle. I'm thinking more of like 60. Just, and granted, some you can take away because of the Lesnar fight, but realistically, it's just another pay per view at $45, and it's the type of pay per view where it's I can wait till Monday to see the results and see what's going to happen, because you know you can pretty much figure nothing's going to happen on it.
Matt Hardy's been fired, everybody. We're going to talk about that when we come back from the break. We've actually got a ton of email questions here. So when we come back, we'll talk about Matt Hardy, and we'll answer another big load of questions here, actually, about a number of different subjects, including, a lot of different things. We're going to make you wait. We'll make you wait until we come back from this next break. So it's coming up here in just a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next half hour or so, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Matt Hardy on Friday, given his release from WWE shortly after on YouTube, he posted a video of himself and his pals eating lunch prior or after a WWE event, and sitting there eating lunch with Matt Hardy was one Rey Mysterio, unmasked, and Matt filmed it, put it on YouTube, and shortly thereafter, he was given his release, so he finally found a way, after all of these weeks, to get the heck out. And what are your thoughts, Mike, on this story?
I think it's probably time. Matt Hardy is the walking example of why the WWE needs to go more NFL-like and actually have a quote-unquote social media policy that they can call guys out for. Because if they did have something like that, I would not have fired Matt Hardy. And obviously they did hit their breaking point with him, and him showing off Mysterio's face. Even though anyone can do a Google search and or go back and on a tape and see what Mysterio's face looks like, it's just they're letting him get off a little bit easy to me from a business point of view, and the fact that it's just they're letting him walk. But with that said, I guess they finally hit their breaking point with it. He got what he wanted. I don't see how this is going to matter to anyone or anything, and I guess he can find out how many, you know, Mattelites or whatever he calls his fans will actually care, the ones that actually care enough to follow him on YouTube and do all that sort of nonsense. Maybe it'll matter for something. He can go into TNA and try to talk some sense into Jeff, and we can get Jeff versus Matt again, because we haven't seen that before. But it's just they need to insert a social media policy so they can stop things like this, or at least have some recourse where they don't have to fire guys like Matt Hardy, and they could sit there and basically let him rot. And not that I want that to happen, but from their point of view, I mean, Matt Hardy has done everything to try to get released. Realistically, I would not have given in and given him what he wanted, but obviously with the Mysterio thing, they hit their breaking point.
Well, to me, it was just like, when I saw that video, I mean, when he put that on YouTube, I was like, well, you finally did it there, buddy. And shortly thereafter, he was in fact released. I don't think that was the entire reason or anything like that. But I mean, to me, it just kind of was like, okay, you know, if you don't release him now, what else does he have on tape? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know what he has on tape, but what could he have on tape? Matt Hardy's been there a long time. You know, somebody emailed me a couple of days ago, and they were talking about going back and watching the first season of Tough Enough. Remember Tough Enough? And they said it's amazing watching the show because guys are on there joking about head injuries, which, of course, 2010 is like a totally different world when this was filmed. And he said they're passing out pain pills like candy. And I don't know what Matt's got on film, but, you know, he carries that camera everywhere. And, you know, maybe he's got some stuff. And Linda McMahon's going up for election in a couple of weeks now. And in fact, as we noted at the beginning of the show, the percentage that I was talking about was apparently the new, I don't even know where exactly this was. I was talking to Dave about it last night, but the prediction is that she now has a 0% chance to win, which when I first heard that, I laughed uproariously because it was like, 0%? She's got no percent. That's impossible. She's got to have 1% chance. But no, they've determined she has 0% chance of winning. But, you know, with the thing 2 weeks away, you know, Matt puts something out there and bad news. So you let him go. You say, you sign this here gag order. You don't disparage the company. You don't say anything bad about the company. 90 days, you're free to go wherever you want. Matt signs it. There you go. So it's kind of the way I looked at the deal. That's my conspiracy theory, if you want to call it that. But he'll probably end up in TNA. He's been begging for it. And as far as social media, they actually have clamped down. I mean, you're not supposed to post anything without the okay of the company, which has led to some funny stuff. Like Melina posted a video where she was talking about the great reaction she got from the fans in Seattle. And I was there, and believe me, it was not a great reaction. It was a 3-minute match where the people were chanting, "You can't wrestle," throughout the match. It doesn't sound very positive to me, but that's what she said. But yeah, Matt knew everything that was against the rules, and he did it all to get fired. So now he's gone, probably end up in TNA, and it probably will lead to something for a couple of weeks, and then he'll be just another guy.
Well, yeah, no matter what he has on tape, I don't think it's going to be any more damaging than just the fact that WWE is finally running into the buzzsaw that is independent contracting. And it looks like it's one of the things that is really going to be a huge thorn in their side. And it's not, I don't want to say wrestlers are stupid, but we have gone how many years now with, you know, the thoughts of unionizing and this and that and how we can get what we want. There's only one major company. There's one major company. If this isn't a time to strike while the iron is hot, I have no idea what could possibly be.
Yeah, but because you know what? I disagree with you in a sense, and I'll tell you why. There is only one place to work. So you're risking a lot by trying to form a union. I mean, it's one thing if you go out on a limb and say, okay, you know what? I'm going to try this. I'm going to be the guy, and I'm going to try and get all these guys to get together and unionize. And you get sniffed out like Jesse Ventura, and Vince goes, you're fired. Well, if there's a WCW around the corner, great, go there. Now there's nothing. I mean, your option is TNA or the Indies or you get a job at Jiffy Lube. I mean, those are your options right now. So I actually think it's tougher than ever now for guys to get that into their head that they're going to give this a shot. It's a very different landscape. I mean, there is only one place to work. That's a negative.
Yeah, but no, I mean, and yes, and what you're saying is exactly right, but if it wasn't going to happen now when she is a huge face of everything, and obviously your Cenas, your Ortons, your guys like that are not going to go ahead and be for that, but there could be other, I'm surprised nobody from the past really piped up and said, you know, really drove home the independent contractor thing when she is running for Senate and you had a big glowing opportunity to do it. And again, it's probably never going to happen. But with that said, I think now was about as best of a time as you could possibly do it, because if she loses and doesn't run again, you're in the same spot you were before anyway.
This person here says, what have you thought about the Jeff Hardy turn so far, particularly his work on the mic for someone who's never been much of a talker? I thought he'd done a pretty good job so far. Well, personally, go ahead, Mike.
No, I was going to say, go ahead. All I could think of was the Pro Wrestling Illustrated from way back in the day where Tommy Rich turned dirty, and it was Tommy Rich says to hell with the fans. And that's kind of basically what Jeff Hardy said on TNA, and it's just like, okay, for a week or two, I can buy that. Realistically, when they go to house shows, he's still going to be getting cheered a lot. And I think it's going to be very hard to really make people buy Jeff Hardy going from, hey, man, that's my picture, and he's going to autograph it for the 16-year-old in the parking lot, to Jeff Hardy hates everybody.
Yeah, I thought he did all right. I was not blown away by it. I thought it was better than his babyface promos. But, I mean, his babyface promos really weren't very good. So it's kind of like, you know, okay, if you have bad promos and then you have acceptable promos, I don't know if that suddenly means you have great promos. It just means they were better than they used to be. So, well, he needs time. It was his first one. I thought it was all right. But, you know, we'll see how it goes. This person here says, has there ever been any angles, when repeated, equal or more popular than the original? That's a good question. I mean, obviously,
well,
you know, there are a lot of angles that are recreations of angles in the past. I mean, the John Cena angle right now, I mean, that angle's been done a million times throughout wrestling history. If you're talking about, like, blatant rip-off recreations of angles, where when you see the angle, you're like, oh, well, this is the NWO angle again. They're trying to recreate it exactly. I don't know if there have ever been.
God, yeah, I'm trying to think of one off the top of my head. I'm thinking of more failures, and the failures are easy to come to mind than the successes are, actually.
The ones that are successes are like, the original angle was really basic, and it was really easy, and you can do a similar angle like that until the end of time, and they will always work. And depending on how hot business is, sometimes it will work really, really well, and sometimes when business is not so hot, they won't work so well at all. So, I mean, you know, was there ever a Montreal that was bigger than the first one? Of course not. I mean, the first Montreal in many ways led to, it led to the Vince McMahon character, which led to the biggest boom period in WWE history and wrestling history. But did anything else ever come close? Absolutely not. Trying to think of any angles that, I mean, all of the angles that TNA and WCW have recreated, none of them have been as successful as the first angle. And the problem with that also is, many of the angles they recreate were not successes in the first place. So you're recreating a failure, and when that happens, it is not going to be success. It's not. So that'd be the best answer to that question that I can think of. This person wants to know, what is Ring of Honor's relationship like with WWE? Is it an unspoken working relationship with regards to most of their talent being evaluated by WWE? Do you think there will ever be another cross-promotional deal similar to WCW or WWE and ECW back in the mid-90s? I would not call it a working relationship of any sort. I don't know what you would really call it. I mean, they WWE is tolerant of ROH. You know, obviously they let, I don't really know even how to classify it. I mean, they're tolerant of them. I think, you know, they're not going to blatantly steal somebody who's under contract. But at the same time, ROH is not at war with WWE. And if they knew that WWE was willing to offer one of their guys a big money deal, they would probably let that person go to make some money. So I would not call it a working relationship. I would not call it a hostile relationship. I would just say that the WWE, and you know, there are people in WWE that probably in power that know very little about ROH. But just in general, it's sort of like they understand that they're doing what they're doing, and they probably hope that they do okay so that there will be guys like Tyler Black that they can take at some point down the road. We'll be back in just a moment. Get Mike's thoughts on that. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We were talking about an ROH-WWE possible working agreement before the break. And Mike, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it's like an unspoken farm system. I mean, realistically, the developmental system in Florida, there's only one right now, and you kind of see what they're doing with that as far as, you know, how ready these guys are. I mean, it's important for them to have Ring of Honor out there, even though the people in management wouldn't even know it exists. But it's good to have Ring of Honor in All Japan because it gives guys a place to go and at least get some TV time and get some, you know, things kind of out of their system. I mean, before Umaga came back, he went over to All Japan when they dropped the 3-minute warning thing. Both of them went over there to Japan. Bull Buchanan's there because they get to work for Keiji Muto, who is obviously, as the great Muda, he is very, American-centric or whatever the proper term would be there as far as how he runs his company and giving those guys the opportunity and giving them work. So it's pretty much unspoken, I think, to me that they do need to have Ring of Honor around or have something like Ring of Honor around to pick up some more talent, guys like Nigel and guys like Brian Danielson and guys like, in this case, Tyler Black, who they just picked up to bring to FCW. It gives them an opportunity. They need to flourish a little bit somewhere before they get picked up because they can't homegrown all the talent. The Christ are not home really growing any right now in a lot of ways, but it gives them the opportunity to pluck off some guys from other places who at least have the ability to do a little bit of more higher-end wrestling and to be on TV.
This person here says, I was curious to know what you think CM Punk's positioning will likely be on Raw now that they've put him on the show. They seem to portray him strongly, but I'm not sure if that's because Bourne is out with an injury. Yes, Bourne is out with shoulder surgery. He'll be gone 4 months. I do know that the upcoming house show lineups have four-way main events for the Raw title, and CM Punk is in that match. And so I'm sure they're planning on pushing him, at least on the house shows, into a main event position. And they need main eventers, so looks like at least for the time being, or actually I shouldn't even say that. At the time they planned those house show lineups, he was going to be a main eventer. This could change tomorrow, but that was certainly what they were planning based on what they were booking. And he also says, what is their internal logic to burying Caval the way they have been? He hasn't won a single match on SmackDown. His losses include Chavo and Tyler Rex. It would be funny if it wasn't so sad. I actually was thinking about this the other night when we played a rap on one of our shows that he did for NXT. And he mentioned total nonstop action. And Michael Cole said, well, that was stupid. And you know, I thought about it at the time, but now, in hindsight, looking back, even more obvious, that was probably pretty stupid.
You know what? He could have said anything right there, and it would not have mattered anyway. They have absolutely no clue what to do with him. And to be honest, I don't even know why he won in a lot of ways, because I don't think that this result was pretty much a foregone conclusion anyway, outside of either putting a mask on him or immediately having him win and go attack Bryan Danielson, where it would have made complete sense to actually do something like that, and they didn't do it. So they're just stuck with a guy that happened to win NXT, and I have a feeling they will hope 1 year from the time we're talking now, they are probably hoping that no one remembers that he was ever on NXT or was ever in WWE at all.
This person here says, why hasn't WWE gone back to Puerto Rico for another big show? Their debut in 2005 at the New Year's pay-per-view not only sold out and did a great merchandising gate, but also had their hottest crowd in years. I actually have no idea. My initial assumption would be something must have gone wrong, or perhaps there was a sense of danger being there. But at the same time, they're running Monterrey, for God's sake. And Monterrey... for those of you that have not been following this, the drug wars in Mexico are extremely bad right now, to the point where even Monterrey, I was just reading about this, Monterrey used to be considered a very, very safe town. And starting this summer, lots of wealthy people were moving out of Monterrey because it has gotten really, really bad. And just throughout Mexico, it's horrible. And WWE still ran Monterrey, the worst crowd they've done there, actually. And I think part of it is because of all of the drug violence. But you know, if they're still going to Mexico, I don't see why they wouldn't be going to Puerto Rico. So I can't answer that one.
Well, especially they have Primo on there, so they have their one person that they would need to have, even though they've lost Carlito. They have one person they could have to actually, you know, have an excuse to go run down there. But yeah, I'm not sure why they have not gone back down there, outside of maybe just knowing how it's going to be as far as economy goes and the amount of money that they want for these tickets too, because that's the other, you know, wrench in things when it comes to WWE. They were able to make back a lot of money that they were losing in America off of ticket sales and other things happening in other places, but again, there's only X amount of dollars that, you know, people can spend on a ticket to WWE, and they don't want to get off of that price, and they don't want to come back down again. Puerto Rico is probably not the right place to go.
This person here says, do you think featuring more squash matches against no-names and not featuring the champion wrestling every week is plausible in 2010? Well, I mean, already, the champion is not defending his title every single week as it is. And I think that that's important. But as far as, like, just appearing, I think John Cena's got to be on the show every week if he's the champion. Or Randy Orton or whoever else. Should they be wrestling every week? No. And as far as squash matches, you know, I was doing a show with, I think it was Lance Storm, a couple of weeks ago, where we were talking about ideas to make wrestling better nowadays. And I talked a long time about a tiered system that I felt would work best, where you have job guys, you have low carders, you have mid carders, and you have main eventers. And in general, everybody will always beat someone at a tier lower than them. And thus you will always have guys called up from developmental, like a Caval or a Tyler Rex, and they will just week after week, maybe only one match a show. You don't need more than one match probably, but they will beat the jobbers. And you'll get over their moves, you'll let them get wins, and then when it's time, you can put them in matches with guys one tier above them, and they beat those guys, or they have competitive matches and lose, that's fine as well, but eventually they beat those guys and they join that pack. And it's the same thing with main eventers and upper mid-carders. You don't ever have an upper mid-carder beat a main eventer. The main eventers are better. Just like in a real sport, your George St. Pierre is very, very, very rarely going to lose to someone not at his level. So then one of these days when you want to make a star, all you have to do is have one mid-carder beat one main eventer, and you've got a star in one night. It's how it always used to be done. It always works. There has never been a time where this basic formula of wrestling has not worked, not a single time. So yes, there is still a place for at least a squash match. I don't know about a large number of them. I certainly can't do primetime wrestling all over again, but you can put a squash match or two on a show, sure.
Well, and the thing is, you can have competitive squash matches too. There's a time to have, you know, Big Show or wherever it is go out there and just murder someone. But there's also, you know, you can have the competitive squash of going, you know, 3, 4, 5 minutes, you know, where a guy gets a little bit in, but for the most part, it's dominated by the one side. And then, you know, you have a case like Brian Kendrick was a good example of this when Paul Heyman was booking there, when he came out as like the Jersey Devil or the Phoenix Coyote or whatever city they would be in. He would be, you know, this masked guy coming out beating someone, and it was like a shock. It was like, well, whoa, what the hell happened there? That's where it actually works for you, and it's one of those things where you do have to recondition your fans to make that happen. Ring of Honor has tried to do that with how they've structured their TV and having squash matches like that. You have to recondition your fans, but once you start doing that, these types of things start happening again, where, again, like you said, there hasn't been a time it has never worked. It works in all sports for everything. It's something that can happen again. You just have to recondition people.
Stevie J, should both Chick Congo and Travis Brown be fired after their miserably bad fight tonight? Well, Chick Congo for being a cheater.
Congo's holding on for dear life there anyway. Damn. I don't think Travis Brown will be. I think they'll give him another chance. But I would not fall over shocked if Chick Congo is going to be out here sooner rather than later.
I don't blame Travis Brown for that fight, personally.
You really can. I mean, he did everything he could. And look, and Congo, the knees that Congo was landing to his gut and to his leg, I mean, he could barely stand on that right leg by the end of the fight. And yes, he was going backwards and basically trying to save himself in that third round. And yes, realistically, he didn't go out on his shield that way. Maybe he should have stood in there and banged. But at the same time, the dude wanted to win the fight, and you know, he almost did not. But he did want to win the fight, so I don't think you can really fault him for that. Congo, at this point, what else are you going to do with him?
It's from Jim in Virginia. Why did Spike stop airing a rerun of the Thursday night TNA Impact on the weekends? I know the shows mostly suck, but sometimes I forget to DVR it to see how crappy it was. Well, funny story. They used to have a replay on the weekends, and sometimes the replay did pretty darn good numbers, actually. And at some point, someone got this idea that, wait a second, if everybody knows there's a replay, that might discourage people from watching on Thursday. So if we cancel the replay, all those people will be forced to watch on Thursday and will inflate the number. I believe, actually, this was an Eric Bischoff call, which is quite the coincidence because there was a deal way back in WCW. Actually, Vince Russo done it in WCW where, you know, when he came on board, the idea was we'll cut out the third hour, which is dragging down the rating, and when we only have 2 hours, that will mean the average will go up and the rating will be higher. Well, in both cases, that didn't happen. They axed the Saturday show, and in fact, not a single person statistically decided to watch Thursday after they cut the Saturday Impact. So either Saturday Impact was just people that loved the show so much that they just had to watch it twice, or the people that were watching Saturday decided once they canceled the Saturday Impact that they were never going to watch it again. So that is the story of the Saturday Impact, and that's why you cannot watch it that day anymore.
Yeah, I think it's kind of moronic with the amount of stuff that's actually on, you know, TV that you would not. You don't have to hype it up. You don't have to say, hey, you know, when they were on Monday, and the replay is going to be Thursday, so you go ahead and watch Raw, and then, you know, try to remember we're going to be on Thursday again, too. You can have it on. You don't have to hype up the fact that you're going to be airing it over again, but look at Spike's programming with Blue Mountain State and A Thousand Ways to Die and all of these other things that are on, too. I'm sure they could fit in, you know, at some point in their schedule, the 2 hours TNA could be on a Saturday or something like that, where they may just possibly somebody stumbles into it.
Just like to mention very quickly, the causes of death of Luna Vachon and Lance Cade are in. Luna Vachon's death was listed as an accidental drug overdose, as a lot of people had suspected. And Lance Cade's death also attributed to an overdose, although he also had serious heart damage of the kind usually associated with excessive steroid use. And he used steroids on and off for almost a decade. And basically, it was kind of a situation where his heart was weak. He took the drugs. They basically stopped his weak heart. And that was what happened there. So those are the official causes of death for those two. And probably, I would guess, I don't know. I suppose more could come out, but I think pretty much that's the end of the story right there.
No, it's very sad, and just another reminder again of just, you know, when Eddie Guerrero died and his oversized heart was pulled out, I mean, just I've heard people actually say, like, you know, the whole thing with SOMA is about, you know, how it should be up to the people and how can they, you know, there are people that are using them safely and all that stuff. Yeah, but these guys obviously don't, they forget about the fact that, well, the heart's a muscle too, and this is just another example of how careful you do have to treat your body.
We're going to head to a break here in just a moment, but when we come back, we're going to wrap up with some quick thoughts on the week to come and a preview as well, and that'll pretty much do it. We're out of questions here for today, but in the future, you can always remember to send your questions to WOL at WrestlingObserver.com. That's WOL at WrestlingObserver.com. We always get to as many of those as we can during the show. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap it up. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here for the final segment on the show. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Wanted to wrap up with just some quick thoughts on this season of Ultimate Fighter. Show has been growing steadily in the ratings. Every single week, in fact, except for one week it was down, but in general, it has grown from the 1.3 range to the 1.9 range. People are getting into this show, and Mike, what have you thought of the season so far?
I've never been a huge fan of the show or anything. I didn't see this past week, so I don't know if Josh Koscheck has actually gotten a win or not. But it's one of those shows, like a lot of them, that it's very easy once they grab a fan or somebody sees it for the first time because of the amount of nonsense on there that drives me nuts. That's why people watch shows like that. Shows like Jersey Shore and other have reality show quote unquote type of shows is. You know, it's easy to get sucked in by Bruce Leroy. It's easy to get sucked in by the personalities on the show and the way the show is structured. So it doesn't surprise me that it's growing in the ratings at all. And it's perfect timing that it is growing the ratings because of the countdown show that's following it.
Next week, of course, it is a big week of pro wrestling and mixed martial arts action. Saturday night, Anaheim, California. It is UFC 121, Lesnar versus Velasquez. I'll be there live for that show, flying back on Sunday morning, because Sunday night it is the WWE Bragging Rights pay-per-view. It is a big two pay-per-view weekend. Mike and I are going to be back next week to talk about both of those shows. We'll recap the Brock Velasquez fight, and we'll see, I guess, who got the last laugh as far as predictions for that fight. The odds are slightly in Brock's favor, but they seem to be getting closer. A lot of people think Kane is winning this fight, so we'll give you the fallout on next week's show. Also preview the Bragging Rights pay-per-view. We'll have all of the teams by the time next week rolls around, and you'll have a two-hour preview show leading into the pay-per-view, which will take place as soon as this program goes off the air. So make sure you check out Wrestling Observer Live throughout the week for more. We always have a live streaming link of this show on the website. If you can't hear it where you're at, if it happens to be preempted, WrestlingObserver.com is the place to go. So thanks, Mike, as always. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks to the folks at Sports Byline USA. We'll talk to you again next week. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline Radio Network.